You're listening to a free show on WrestlingObserver.com, the leaders in news and inside information on both professional wrestling and mixed martial arts. To learn how to subscribe and get immediate access to hundreds of past newsletters written by Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez, as well as thousands of hours of podcasts and interviews, go to bit.ly/JNPO subscribe. That's bit.ly/JNPO subscribe. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. Episode 43 of Josh Nason's Punch-Out is here. I am Josh Nason, assistant web editor, podcaster for WrestlingObserver.com. Happy International Fight Week. We kick off the week's festivities. Actually, the festivities really have already kicked off by the point you're hearing this on Wednesday morning. But there's a lot going on. F4W convention raging in Las Vegas. People probably drunk running around the streets, jumping in fountains, Mario Giannetti style. You never know what you're going to see out in Las Vegas, especially when a lot of our subscribers are in town. So hopefully everyone is having fun there, staying safe, and getting ready to enjoy three nights of fights coming up starting on Thursday night, then going into Friday, and then going to Saturday with the arguably the best card of all time. And I know I shit on this card a long time ago, and a lot of other people were really frustrated with it. But you know what? It's really good. And they got the star power. They got the guy we wanted. They got Brock Lesnar, and he's coming back, UFC 200 on Saturday. Help me break this down. We have a very special guest from MMAfighting.com, Dave Doyle, a great Boston man, if I do say so myself, now living out in sunny Los Angeles, California. Dave and I talked for about 45 minutes. Originally, it was supposed to be about half an hour, but you know your guy. He gets to talk in and stuff and is able to cajole people into longer. So we had actually a really nice interview, 45 minutes. But we didn't do your typical fight preview. What we did is we took all these different fights that are happening this weekend, all the fighters involved, rather, and we looked and we took our top 10, what we are kind of like storylines or the fighters that we're really interested in what their outcome is the most, the guys we had the most questions about, the guys that to us just kind of meant the most when it comes to what their result is going to be coming out of these next three events. And it's not all the main eventers, not all the top stars. And what follows is a really interesting conversation. I did not see Dave's list. He did not see mine. We kind of went into it. We did have some matches, but we did have a lot of differences. So I think you guys are really going to enjoy this. And this will be a nice kickoff for your UFC 200 Fight Week coverage. If you haven't listened to anything yet, please do so. A lot of good content out there. Some good stuff coming, hopefully, to our site and also on all these other sites as well, including MMAfighting.com. Without further ado, let's kick it off for our conversation with Dave Doyle of MMAfighting.com. Well, the big UFC fight week upon us, in case you hadn't heard. Three events. Boy, how many fights is going on? We have 36 fights, 72 fighters total coming up here over this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. It's going to be insane. UFC 200, one of the best pack cards of all time. And so we wanted to start the preview a little bit early, so we brought in a very special guest, a good Boston boy. We'll talk a little bit about that. He is a staff writer for MMAfighting.com. He's done columns for Yahoo Sports, living in sunny Los Angeles, California. Happy to be joined by the man himself, Dave Doyle. And Dave, we always try to start out with a really hard-hitting, tough, you know, buckle your seatbelt questions here, even though you're a special guest. So I have to ask you, how hot is it where you are right now?
You know what? Actually, not very hot at all. It's sunny, 70 degrees, typical day in Los Angeles, but it is supposed to be about 105 degrees in Las Vegas this weekend. So, by the time I get out there, I guess it won't be so much fun anymore.
Interesting. So it's crazy. It's cooler there in Los Angeles than it is here in Dover, New Hampshire, not too far away from where you grew up. Again, a great Boston boy. And you and I were emailing back and forth, and you cited a classic pro wrestling reference in former evil WWF official Dangerous Danny Davis from Dover, New Hampshire. I mean, this, you're a wealth of encyclopedic knowledge. It's fantastic.
Well, you know what, Josh? I'm even going to go one further here because I was actually in attendance on the infamous night at the Boston Garden when Dangerous Danny Davis was the referee and Randy Savage took the brass knucks and hit Tito Santana with it and pinned him. And, of course, Dangerous Danny Davis hadn't gone full heel at that point. But, you know, if you look back, maybe that was the start of where Danny Davis went wrong.
It's just, you know, I as I told you, I'm going to try to track him down. I think he has not fully answered for some of his crimes. What it was funny is I rewatched all the old Saturday Night main events last 2 years ago, I think it was. And it's funny because you kind of see, you know, when he gets kind of brought in the mix. And so a lot of it played out like Superstars of Wrestling, whatever. But it's kind of funny to see that eventually he just became a regular referee again. And I kept thinking, like, isn't there always going to be trust issues? I mean, if there was like a Major League Baseball umpire that could get, you know, corrupt official or that NBA official from a couple of years ago, they're not just going to let him back in. This is as Gorilla Monsoon would say, it's a travesty of justice, Dave.
Well, you know, I seem to vaguely recall that there was like one episode of Superstars of Wrestling where they just kind of vaguely acknowledge, like, yeah, he's been reinstated on a probationary basis or something like that, and then they never acknowledged it again. But as you can see, the commissions back then were just as lax as they are today, so nothing ever really changes.
Unbelievable. the ABC definitely needs to get involved in making sure that he has a lifetime ban. You never know. He could end up in the octagon with all these fights going on this week, and they could need extra referees. And if I saw Danny Davis in there, I think I would pass out.
Yeah, you know, I mean, can he do worse than some of those Nevada officials? We're in shot. Sorry.
Steve Mazzagatti, Danny Davis, kind of. Well, good. So what, you know, you mentioned you're about to head out to Las Vegas, the desert here in a little bit. When are you heading into town and with so many MMA fighters expected to be on hand, what are going to be some of your duties for the week?
You know, I'm actually not heading out until Friday. I'm only going to be in town for the big one. We've got a vast array of MMA fighting folk who are going to be in town all week. So I am, you know, normally I would be out there all week doing, you know, working at the open workouts and all the various stuff that goes down in the week. But just fight night duty this time, and I'll be, you know, doing my, I usually do the live recaps off the major events for MMAfighting.com. It just kind of worked out that way because I have, you know, originally come from a newspaper background and I'm pretty solid at just like, if you need something done fast on a deadline and need it done right, you know, so that's how I end up, in that situation. And then I, do some work for a wire service. So I'll be writing something for them. And then I usually write a column for Yahoo after the event. Like Kevin Iola, being the lead writer, handles whatever the biggest angle is coming out of the fight, and then we just kind of figure out what's clicking aside from what Kevin wrote about and go from there. So it's just it'll be a big hodgepodge of stuff and a big blur on fight night after we sit through what, 6,000 fights in 3 days, something like that.
yeah, exactly. And so I'm going to tell the listeners that usually we do longer interviews. We kind of get in the background of the writers. We like to talk about a lot of media stuff, but I know we have about half an hour or so with you today, so we'll save that for another time because you mentioned you mentioned the newspaper background, and I immediately have like 1,000 questions that came up. So we'll make sure we do that at a different time, especially more about this Boston background, which I know everyone likes to hear. Before we start talking about the fights this weekend, you posted a story or a link to a story on your Twitter anyway from MMAfighting.com about Frank Mir requesting his release from the UFC. What's the details?
So basically, Frank Mir was on the MMA Hour today, and he, on one hand, has decided not to fight his USADA suspension, even though he maintains his innocence, basically saying it would just be too much of a time and a money drain at this point in his career to pursue it. But so, you know, when you're Frank, you're 37 years old, you're on a suspension that's going to take you for, you know, still almost 2 years. So he can't fight. And Fox doesn't seem interested in having him stay as a studio host while he's under suspension because of how that looks. So he's basically asking the USC for his release so that he can pursue other opportunities elsewhere. You know, he didn't quite come out and say that he wants to go fight somewhere else that there isn't a commission overview, but certainly did come out and say that, you know, he'd like to be free to pursue commentating gigs elsewhere. And it's understandable, you know, if you're in his shoes, got to make a living somewhere. And this is a guy who, I mean, he's a very, very solid analyst, and a guy who, if you remember his days as WEC, he was really, really good in the color commentating role. So it's not like he's all full of hate and venom towards the UFC or anything like that, but he just wants to try to find a way to make a living. So that's pretty much what that's about.
Yeah, I could see them, especially since he's one of those guys that's been with them forever. I can see them definitely doing that. If he can't earn with them, especially even in, you know, in any type of like broadcasting or anything like that, it sounds like it would be the right thing to do. It'll be interesting to see what kind of happens with him. I think most people think he's, you know, past the expiration date, so to speak, with his fighting days. But, you know, he's a name, and as a certain promotion run out of San Jose will tell you, names matter. So, you know, who knows? We could see Frank Mir versus Matt Mitrione on a barge somewhere offshore coming to our TV set soon. So you never know.
And, you know, there's another heavyweight of note who's based out of Russia who always could use a new opponent. Ah. So you never know.
The plot thickens, as they say. The plot thickens. Okay, so we have, as Dave mentioned and I mentioned before, 36 fights coming up in 3-day span, 72 fighters involved. So instead of the traditional kind of, you know, let's go through each card or any of that type of stuff preview, you're going to get a ton of places. What I wanted to do is basically out of all these 72 fighters, we have no idea what the other one's list is. 10 fighters who I'm really interested in kind of seeing what the outcome of their fight is. Now, granted, there's a lot of these people, right? But there's 10 specific ones that really, you know, careers could change, earning could change, the story could change, all these different type of things. So we picked out of all these guys 10 fighters, and I'm sure there'll be some crossover here. So would you like me to start? Or would you like to start, Dave?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. My first one, and again, these are ranked in no specific order, is we'll start with Joanna Jędrzejczyk. She defends her strawweight title against Claudia Gadela at the Tough finale. I, like many of you, probably have not watched much of Tough. I watched maybe the first 3 hours, and then it became just like every other Tough season, last few, and that story has obviously been talked about the relevancy of the show and what have you. It could not tell you a lot about a lot of the fighters on the show. But Joanna, for those that have watched, has, you know, reports are, and kind of the clips you've seen, has not come across that well. You know, she really seemed to be cruising to a really interesting place a few years ago, not even a few years ago, last year. And, you know, she had that fight in November, the co-main event, when Ronda Rousey was fighting, and a lot of people thought maybe that she was going to appeal to some of Ronda's fans. Had a 5-round decision victory that, you know, while convincing, didn't really give that hook to a lot of maybe some mainstream viewers that may have liked to follow another female fighter. I think, you know, with a blood rival like this, someone that she barely beat out, you know, not too long ago via split decision, this is a very interesting fight for her. And I think in a lot of ways, you know, this is an important fight for her, kind of where she stands and to answer a lot of questions about whether she can best Claudia Gadelha. So that's my first pick.
And you know what? I guess we're going with two sides of the same coin here, because I had Claudia as one of my 10. And, you know, for me, I think it's because, you know, Claudia was the last fighter who ever really, really challenged Joanna and pushed her and, you know, really took her to the brink. And since then, between injuries and whatnot, we've only seen that fight was more than a year and a half ago, and since then we've only seen her one time. So I'm interested in seeing, I don't know, I guess it's as much a measuring stick on Joanna to see. It seems like Joanna has really improved tremendously in that time. It really separated herself from the pack in the strawweight division. But I don't know, I mean, was it a tough matchup style for Joanna the first time around? Has she improved? And I know I seem to be talking about Joanna more, but, you know, Claudia was right there with her 18 months ago, and I'm just interested to see, has she lost a step? Has she improved? What better way to what better way to judge this than putting her right back in there with the champion?
Yeah, I think Claudia has the look that is, you know, it has that kind of mainstream look. You know, attractive woman, happens to talk the talk, which is good. Anyone that's seen the show and has seen a lot of her personality come out. Granted that she, you know, English isn't her first language, but she speaks it so well that interviews-wise, I think with maybe some refinement, she could definitely cross over there. So, you know, if for the UFC's sake, obviously, Joanna, it appeals to maybe a different type of fan in that her fighting style is more punishing, beating people up, simply that offensive attack. But Claudia Britt, you know, there's a different, interesting dynamic there. So, yeah, I think to your point, there's a... you know, it will be interesting to see where she's at. You're right. She's been out so long and could be, I wouldn't say a star making performance, but something convincing. You know, we could have something, something growing here in Claudia Gadelha.
Absolutely. Should I, go with my next
All
one
right.
here?
Let's hear it.
You know what? I'm going to go with the Black Beast, Derek Lewis.
Oh.
I just find this guy really intriguing in the first place. If you follow him on social media, like, he's good once or twice a day to just, you know, make you like spit out your coffee on your screen laughing. So he's an intriguing personality, and I think he's a guy that could be better marketed than the UFC's put behind him. But we're really going to find out, you know, just how far he's come along when he faces a guy like Roy Nelson. You know, I think for a while I had kind of mentally thought of Derek Lewis as just kind of a wild slugger who had reached a certain level, who's capable of knocking people out, but, you know, probably was like a one-trick pony who wasn't going to get too much farther. And then when I watched him in his fight against Gabriel Gonzaga, I mean, Gabriel Gonzaga, for all of his flaws, is a beast on the floor, and he had Derek Lewis in a really bad way, and I was impressed with how Derek managed to escape from that and come back and just absolutely just destroy him to finish that fight. So that to me was like a good sign of that guy's heart, and it, just, you know, maybe he's a little bit better of a fighter than we thought he were. So now going up against Roy Nelson, you know, maybe Roy's hitting that point where he's kind of coming to the end of the line, but he's still a ridiculously tough, ridiculously durable guy. And if Derek Lewis can put away Roy Nelson, I think that would make a real statement.
All right, yeah, Derek Lewis, he of the 6-2 in the UFC, riding a 3-fight win streak. His fights never go decision. They always end either him getting knocked out or him knocking the other guy out. And you're right. I thought, you know, after that, you know, he first came in the UFC, won 2 very impressively in the first round, 2 fights. Called out Matt Mitrione. I was cage side for that fight in Connecticut that night, and Mitrione just laid him flat in about 41 seconds. So we kind of thought maybe he had plateaued, but yeah, he's had a really nice rebound here. And you're right, someone that I think, you know, if he picks up a big win here over Roy Nelson, I think you're going to see, hopefully, UFC get a little bit more behind him and market him a little bit more. Because he's what everyone loves when it comes to heavyweight fighters. A big guy, no nonsense, knocks people out, and you're right, pretty funny as well. So I'm looking forward to seeing what's happening with that. He was not on my list. However, a guy that was much smaller than he was on my list, and that, my friend, is Gray Maynard. That's right, Gray Maynard, returning to action in the octagon once again, talking about people that are past their expiration date. You know, really a question of whether or not he should be in the UFC or even fighting at this point. He has not won a fight since June 2012 when he had that terrible, awful split decision victory against Clay Guida in a fight that headlined and forever marred Atlantic City, New Jersey. Since then, fought sparingly over the years, has lost 4 in a row to the likes of TJ Grant, Nate Diaz, Ross Pearson, and Alexander Yakovlev back in April 2015. And he, you know, he's a guy that was part of a very important era, had these great fights with Frankie Edgar, is fighting a relative unknown for Fernando Bruno coming up at 145 pounds. You know, I nowhere near the top of the card. The a lot closer to the end, the beginning. I in my heart, I wish he wouldn't fight because I worry about what's going to happen to him later on in life with just all this toll of just this, you know, the physical toll that these fights have taken on him. I would think if he loses badly, I can't justify keeping him around. I don't know what's going to happen. What do you think about Gray Maynard?
Gray was on my list as well, actually.
All right.
So we have a match. You know, and I found myself surprised that I had Gray on the list simply because Gray is definitely, for me, at lightweight, had hit that curve where you're just like, You know, you hit a curve with a fighter. It's like, man, I do not want to see this guy take any more abuse. You know, like, I think right now I'm very much that way with Nate Marquardt, to use an example.
Yep.
And Gray, especially after that last fight, you know, when he's losing. I mean, when he loses to TJ Grant and Nate Diaz, that's one thing. But when it's someone like Alexander Yakovlev, it's like, man, how do you keep pushing yourself here? And yet, you know, okay, he wants to go down to 145. He wants to try himself in another division. I do think, you know, ultimately his legacy is going to be coming so damn close to beating Frankie Edgar and not finishing him, and, you know, just never quite rebounding from that. And there's, I don't know. I mean, if he can't beat Fernando Bruno, I mean, really, at that point, the UFC should just release him, even if he is a name, because there's just a certain point where we just don't want to see guys anymore. And, you know, I mean, hope it works out for him, and I find myself intrigued in spite of myself simply because he's making the effort to go in another direction and try something new. But, you know, I mean, I'm interested in seeing this, but maybe not for the best reasons.
I would agree. Next pick is yours.
Oh, sure. Let's go with Ill Will Brooks.
Mm.
I am so interested in this fight. I'm struggling to come up with the words here, but you know, for me, I don't understand why Bellator wasn't able to capitalize on what they had with Brooks. And, you know what? I mean, from what I've heard, it was just a clash of you know, Brooks butted head with management, and things just didn't get better. But this is a guy who, you know, isn't afraid to say what's on his mind, is capable of delivering exciting fights, isn't afraid to step up, isn't afraid to take, you know, I mean, his big break was against Michael Chandler, and he got that on like 9 days' notice when Eddie Alvarez had to drop out. And, you know, everyone at the time was saying, well, who the hell is this guy? And he went out, and it was a really close fight, but he won, and then won the next one pretty emphatically. So I've always been to me, Will Brooks is the type of guy that when MMA fans say that they like a certain type of fighter, they like someone who's confident and not unwilling to make bold predictions and who will step up and fight everyone. And Brooks has done that every step along the way, and yet for whatever reason he hasn't quite clicked. So especially where he got his release from Bellator, he is putting a lot of pressure on himself by coming out here, and he's taken on, you know, Ross Pearson is never going to be champion, but he's a tough out every single time out there. So, you know, I just looking forward to seeing what Will Brooks can do in the UFC.
Well, like a good date, we have a match again. Will Brooks is also on my list too. Eight fight winning streak going into this one, and I'm interested in seeing him primarily because I'm always intrigued about kind of where levels are with, you know, certain UFC talents and certain Bellator talents, really. And I think we saw that to an extent, Benson Henderson going to Bellator, fighting out of his weight class, arguably, and getting beat pretty handily in his first title opportunity there a short time ago. And I'm interested in seeing, you know, Will Brooks getting to this next level, getting to the biggest level in sport, and getting a guy in Ross Pearson who's no easy out, you know, basically a 500 fighter at this point in his career. I don't think he's won or lost more than one in a row in like probably his past eight or something along those lines. But this is kind of the measuring stick to see where guys like this who, I mean, you know, you mentioned he beat Michael Chandler, beat him twice, you know, knocked him out, TKO win the last time he fought him, beat everyone in there against him, and left as the champion. And yeah, I'm always interested to see when guys like this get their opportunity at this bigger stage, how they're going to perform. Obviously, UFC has been kind of burned by past fighters, you know, Hector Lombard, whatever you want to say, all these other ones that they get to this stage and may not perform as well. A nice kind of soft laying space for Will Brooks. He gets a tough opponent, which is what he wanted, but also not in a necessarily major spotlight fight as well. So very interested to see with this what happens with Will Brooks as well. So good, we get another match. Next on my list, we'll see if this one matches. He is the lightweight champion of the world. Rafael Dos Anjos is one of my top 10 that I'm interested in seeing the outcome of their fight coming up this weekend. He takes on Eddie Alvarez in a headliner show on Fight Pass. The reason I'm so interested in this is I feel like we still don't know a lot about RDA when it comes to a like a championship level, if that makes sense. He obviously, you know, bashed around Anthony Pettis to win the title, came back after a, you know, a decent long layoff, and beat Donald Cerrone convincingly in just 66 seconds in December. But I still feel like, you know, he doesn't get the full respect as a lightweight champion, and compare some of these other guys who have held the title. I think people still, I don't think feel it's a fluke, or they're just not fully behind him, fully get him. But I think with a convincing win over Eddie Alvarez this week, I mean, there's no doubt. If people had any doubt about him or kind of hesitant, I mean, you look at this you know, list of names that he's gone through in the stretch. Benson Henderson, Nate Diaz, Anthony Pettis, Donald Cerrone. If he beats Eddie Alvarez, I mean, you can't disrespect the guy anymore or can't overlook him anymore. So RDA is one of my picks for this weekend.
I agree with pretty much everything you said there on Dos Anjos. I also have to say that Eddie Alvarez was one of my 10 guys. So
right.
let me go into him here. I guess for me with Eddie, I mean, it's just the fact that this is his moment. You know, this is what he's been building up to his entire career, all that time that he spent outside the UFC saying that, hey, I'm as good as anyone else here. And if you look up, you know, over his last few victories, all those lightweights from that era, he's beaten Gilbert Melendez, the former Strikeforce champ. He's beaten, you know, he owns wins over former, what, Strikeforce, UFC lightweight, and Strikeforce, UFC, Bellator, and WEC champion. So he won that little kind of unofficial tournament between those guys, among those guys. And, you know, I think the thing that's intriguing for me about Alvarez is, he had, you know, he came in with his reputation basically as a slugger, as kind of a headhunter and a guy who would put having an entertaining fight, you know, ahead of having a safe fight. And then he gets into the UFC, he regroups after his loss to Cerrone, and you look at his last two victories over Gilbert Melendez and Showtime Pettis. They were smart. They weren't the most exciting fights, but they were smart wins. You know, he did what he had to neutralize his opponent's strengths, and did so in fights where, you know, I think everyone was kind of like, oh, maybe Eddie is finally reaching a level where he can't beat his opponent. So for me, I know you said that Dos Anjos maybe doesn't quite have the respect that he should get. I don't know if Alvarez is getting his proper due. And I don't know. I mean, when push comes to shove, I kind of feel like my head says Dos Anjos wins this fight, but I just got that little voice in my head just telling me, like, hey, you keep picking against Alvarez and he keeps winning. So, you know, I want to see if I'm wrong again, basically.
I agree. Interesting. That's going to be a very fun fight to watch. And I think both guys have a lot to lose on that one, especially, you're right, Alvarez not fully kind of getting over for whatever reason. And yeah, that's going to be a very interesting fight. It's a good pick. I'll go next. My next one is a guy that is not fighting for a title, but I think people thought at one point he was on his way to fight his countrymen. This person is Joe Duffy. Joe Duffy coming in on...
Wow.
Joe Duffy coming in. They're going to fight Mitch Clark at UFC Fight Night 90 this weekend, or this week, rather. He is, you know, he came in from Ireland, had a lot of buzz behind him, came in, won his first two fights, first-round finishes. Was kind of just this, you know, kind of like, oh, could he fight Conor again? He's the last guy to beat Conor McGregor before Nate Diaz, of course. And just there was a lot of, like, kind of buzz. And then he got a big opportunity against Dustin Poirier in January. Lost the unanimous decision. Poirier looked great in that fight. And now we get to see, you know, how he rebounds from this. Is he a guy that can look like he did before when he came into UFC and had a four-fight winning streak total? Or kind of like... You know, or is he just one? Is he just going to be kind of one of the packs? So I'm really interested in seeing what Joe Duffy comes out this weekend, and you know, a big three set of events. I'm sure there'll be a lot of Conor talk and things like that. So you know, maybe a little bit of it got to him before that Poirier fight. But yeah, I'm interested to see what happens with Joe Duffy. He takes on Mitch Clark this weekend.
You know what? That's a good call. I think I'll be honest. I think I had kind of mentally written him off as a hype job after that Poirier fight, because I kind of felt like, you know, I kind of felt like he rode that Irish MMA wave into the UFC and kind of got a little bit of favorable matchmaking and, you know, got a lot of press because you couldn't just write Joe Duffy in your story. You had to write Joe Duffy, the last guy to defeat Conor McGregor. That was written by law. And I don't, you know, but now that you're talking about it, maybe, I don't know, maybe I did, maybe Poirier was just a little bit too much too soon. My gut feeling is still kind of like, you know, he's a pretty solid brawler and a pretty solid slugger who, you know, maybe a little bit lacking in the rest of the game, and he'll probably have a spot on the card for a while. You know, simply on his name and on the fact that he can put on a crowd pleasing fight. But yeah, now that you mention it, it will be kind of interesting to see whether he's able to bounce back and shake off what was a pretty bad loss.
Hmm. All right, you're up next.
You know what? Let's just go straight for the big boy, Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
Gotta go with the obvious one.
All right.
You know, we had to talk. You know, sometimes you want to come up with the edgy or interesting picks, and sometimes you just got to go with the obvious ones, right?
Yeah.
When, you know, I got to be honest, when they first announced this fight, I was underwhelmed. I was just, okay, you know, Brock's back, whatever. They're a little desperate to get some star power on this huge mega event. And then when I listened last week to the press conference, and it Brock just completely owned that press conference.
Yep.
And like, to the point that he almost made, like, you know, John Jones and Daniel Cormier seem like they were like, I don't know, like tie and tie against Crash Holly or something like that. And just realized that man, we really did miss this guy. He really does have that presence, that aura, that ability to, like, just draw, just by being there, just command your attention and draw a crowd, and just, you kind of hang off of what he has to say. And, you know, thinking it through a little more, I mean, no matter how much success Brock has had in his athletic career, he always seems to have his eye on something else. And, you know, obviously, Brock is doing this because he has a chance to make a big, 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 big payday. But I do legitimately believe that the competitor that's in Brock Lesnar, you know, the same guy who won an NCAA wrestling title and the same guy who tried out and almost made it to the Minnesota Vikings, and, you know, that guy's never, ever, ever going to be completely satisfied. And if you're someone, if you're a competitor like him, no matter how much fame you can achieve in the WWE and how much money you can make in the WWE, when you went out the way that he did against Cain Velasquez and Alistair Overeem, I mean, that can't sit well with him. And I do believe him when he says that he didn't want to spend the rest of his life thinking, what if? So for him to come out, to return, to do it for competitive reasons, and then to also face someone who hits as hard as Mark Hunt, you know, I mean, you can't say that they're giving him a gimme here. Like, you know, all of Brock's detractors came out and said, you know, well, he doesn't like being hit in the face, he doesn't like being punched, blah, blah, blah. Well, guess what? Mark Hunt is going to punch him. So, as soon as I heard Brock start talking at that press conference, I was like, oh, man, I can't wait to see this fight.
He is also on my list as well. He has to be. I mean, who is not interested in watching this guy come back? He's so much fun. He's one of the biggest stars in combat sports. We love stars. We love these heavyweights like this. And we were just talking about Derek Lewis a few minutes ago. Guys like Lesnar, this is what one of the fun parts of the sport, with so many. I mean, even this whole weekend, there are guys that we have no idea who they are. We don't really know their background. Could be the tough thing. All this, there's so many people that don't have a story. We know Brock's story. He's into it. You know, all you're right. That press conference, the media call was great. The all the stories you start to see this week going through the news feeds, that a lot of them mainstream deal with Brock. He's good. He's best for business, to take that term from WWE. It is. Yeah, I mean, he's just the show, you know. He's it, and this is I'm really interested in seeing if he beats Mark Hunt. Is he definitely want to come back? How's that work with WWE? If he just gets blitzed by Mark Hunt, does he say, this was fun, I'm good, I got it out of my system? We really don't know. With the heavyweight division the way it is, with so many old guys, Yeah, I mean, we have no idea what's going to happen here. So I'm intrigued. I think everyone's intrigued. Any haters of Brock are going to absolutely just, they're going to fade away by the time that bell hits and the door closes on Saturday night. It's going to be a spectacle, and I cannot wait. So good choice, Brock Lesnar. We have another match. My next guy is someone that is a former champion, someone that I have no idea where he's at in his career at this point, and that is Johnny Hendricks. Johnny Hendricks coming off the Blitzkrieg loss to Stephen Wonderboy Thompson in February. He is, it's hard to say, you know, with the weight cut thing, that seems to be a big deal, where he's at with that. And just this guy that was such a, you know, he rode in that GSP fight. A lot of people thought he lost that fight, or sorry, thought he won that fight. The judges thought he lost that fight to GSP. He came back and won the vacant title, being Robbie Lawler. Lost the title, beat Matt Brown, and then Stephen Thompson. We talked about that, but it's kind of like I have no idea where he is. You know, Kelvin Gastelum on the other side, another guy you don't really know where he is. So this is a great crossroads fight for Johnny Hendricks with another loss. It's like, you know, how does he look physically? Does he just, is his time already passed him by for what seems like such a short run in the UFC? So I'm very interested to see what happens with Johnny Hendricks this weekend.
I didn't have Johnny on my list, but, you know, I mean, yeah, for all the reasons that you said there, Johnny has spent, he going all the way back to his college wrestling career, has done a lot of hard weight cuts. And, you know, he's gigantic for a welterweight. There were all those times during the top of his reign where he just looked like death going into the weigh-ins. And then he had that incident where the Tyron Woodley fight got canceled. So, I mean, especially the way he lost to Thompson, it's hard to see Johnny making another run at a championship. And like you said, this is another guy who is fighting in Gastelum, who's had his share of issues as well. Yeah, I don't know. My gut kind of tells me that Hendricks is kind of on his way out. But then again, who knows? They're doing the early weigh-ins in Las Vegas for this one.
Yes,
so,
yes.
You know, maybe this could be a pretty interesting little test case. And does that really make a difference? And how's Johnny going to look with the earlier weigh-ins as opposed to how he's looked in his recent fights?
Okay, you're up next.
What are we up to? Seven, I think?
Something like that.
Sure. You know, why not? Let's go with Sage Northcutt.
yes.
Because you know we'll all be watching. Yeah, for all the reasons we want to dismiss Sage, we will be watching. We will be interested in seeing what happens. You know, it's shouldn't look good in that last fight. I know he's trying to chalk it up to having strep throat, and you know, obviously that must not have been an easy thing. But I mean, fighters fight sick all the time. You know, there's no one goes into a fight completely healthy. Maybe Brian Barberina was just too much of a step up in competition. They're sort of kind of babying him along a little bit. But at some point, you know, at some point, no matter how photogenic you might be and no matter how much potential you might seem to have, you know, you either have to sink or swim, or the audience is isn't going to stick with you if you keep losing. And it's really, really, really crazy that we're talking about a 20-year-old in terms of, like, if he doesn't look good in this one, he's considered a washout. But, you know, I mean, Fernando Bruno he's fighting? Or am I getting, I'm trying to get my fighters.
Yeah, that's who.
No, that's great. I'm sorry. And Enrique Marin. You know, Enrique Marin is not going to be competing for a UFC championship anytime soon. So Sage kind of needs to come out and look like he did in his first UFC fight, or else it's going to be a little bit of trouble in the Northcutt household.
I agree. A chance to shut up the haters, or at least quiet them for a little bit. Actually, I think win or lose, the haters are going to be happy. They're going to be louder if he wins. But yeah, Sage Northcutt, very interesting story. And again, a reason to watch some of these undercards, which is a good thing to have. My final three, we'll start with this one. This is pretty simple to me. Jose Aldo. I want to see what happens after that, that amazing knockout loss, quick snap of the fingers knockout loss to Conor McGregor. I want to see what guy comes back. I want to see if he is physically how he's doing. You mentioned the weight cuts and everything. I think this is his chance to really reclimb the mountain again and, throw all types of other, comeback cliches and all that stuff in there. But this is his chance to show that he was truly one of the pound-for-pound best. And as unfair as it is with a loss here, I'm sure people will be like, he was never that good to begin with. They'll try to dismiss him and all this stuff. But this is his chance to get back to Conor. If Conor is eventually going to fight at 145 again, who knows? But this is Aldo's chance and a big stage for him, and he's getting a title opportunity, so it's on him. It's on him to go out there and reclaim this interim version of the belt and start the chase for Conor. So Jose Aldo is one of my final three.
Jose was on my list as well.
Yeah.
It's kind of obvious, right? I mean, sometimes you simply get caught and you move on and you were bound and you put it past you and it's, like it never happened. But sometimes it's not just the fact that he got clipped like that, but the fact that that happened in 13 seconds after an entire year's worth of buildup where those two went all around the world together and Conor taunted him the entire time and, told him what he was going to do and did it. That's a real question mark on whether you can come back and be the same fighter you were before, especially where, Jose's got a lot of mileage on the tires for someone his age. Absolutely, Aldo. And it's not as if they're just kind of putting him in there with a tune-up fight either. They're putting him in there with a Frankie Edgar who is as good as Frankie Edgar's ever been, and Frankie Edgar was pretty damn good in the first place,
I agree.
Cain Velasquez.
Yeah.
Cain, for me, it's like we've been through this drill with Cain Velasquez for so long where, he gets hurt, he's gone for a while, and then when he returns, you expect him to just come back and look like Cain Velasquez, the natural-born killer that he always was. And, just go through that cycle again where he starts winning and thinking, well, maybe this guy really is the greatest heavyweight of all time. But you know what? There's just a certain point where he's, I think, 33 years old now. These injuries have added up. It's not like, it takes a toll when you have to do this over and over and over. And, he did look terrible against Fabricio Werdum for whatever reasons. I know it's supposed to be high altitude in Mexico City, but both of them had to fight
Cain.
Sea level Cain. We're in Las Vegas. Yeah, that's about sea level. Part of me is like, will we see a prime Cain, or are we, is he finally starting to hit the decline a little bit? That said, I think Travis Brown's a pretty good matchup for him. It's kind of if you're going to bring him back right away instead of throwing him right into a main event, a fighter like Brown who's tough but is can get sloppy and is prone to making mistakes, it's kind of right up Velasquez's alley.
Well, we have another match again. Cain is on my list, and I think he's going to be on most people's list for kind of this question mark, right? And you mentioned a lot of the reasons there, but I mean, he went through the stretch. He was fighting the same guys every single time. It seems on this roller, this merry-go-round of either Junior Dos Santos or Bigfoot Silva, back and forth. And there was just this long stretch. He finally got a new opponent. Didn't look good. The injuries, 33 years old, the whole question of his AKA training too tough and all this is like, I think he can answer a lot of those questions. I love the fact he's not in a headlining fight on this. He didn't have to carry the promotion. A lot of the weight, I believe him and Travis Brown are opening the show on UFC 200 when it comes to the pay-per-view portion. If that holds true, I think that's great as well. I think we're going to get some questions answered here. And I mean, he could blow out his knee a day afterward, but at least we're going to get a chance to see what Cain Velasquez looks like at 33 at this stage without the title, and if he's going to be considered a possible contender down the road. So I think with a convincing win here, He puts himself right in that conversation for getting that title shot again, but we'll have to see what happens. And yeah, it's very interesting stuff. My last fighter is Cain's teammate, and that is Daniel Cormier. And the reason I'm so interested in seeing Daniel Cormier, and I didn't say John Jones, is because with a loss here, I think Cormier kind of fades away from that light heavyweight title picture as long as John Jones holds the title. Unfortunate as that is, Cormier probably could beat most everyone in the division, and in a lot of ways he has. But I keep thinking back to that press conference, the big one that they had recently, everyone on the dais, and Daniel Cormier got booed. And he got booed repeatedly. And you could tell he was trying to have fun with it, but there was something there was like he couldn't understand why John Jones, off to his left, had done all these bad things. And they wanted to go NWO. They wanted to cheer the bad guy. And this guy had done everything right. Just, he just couldn't do anything. So he makes a huge statement here if he can beat John Jones. It just seems there's so much of this kind of thing in people's heads that John Jones never really lost a title. So Daniel Cormier is kind of just this, not a fake champion, but there's just this giant asterisk with him that he didn't beat the real champion to get it. If he does that here, that obviously sets up a third fight down the road. There's a lot of things going into Daniel Cormier here. There's this big thing about can he win the big one. He's the champion going into this, but I think a lot of people still consider John Jones a champion. A lot of questions for Daniel Cormier and a lot of a huge stakes for the winner and the loser of this fight.
We had Jones out here at a media launch in downtown LA last week, and he actually brought up a point about Cormier that I actually thought was valid in regards to Cormier being booed at the press conference. Jones thought that in a way it was kind of good that he got booed at the press conference back then, because that, since it happened so long ago, that gave him time to process it and kind of get over it, use it as fuel for motivation or whatever. Whereas if had that not happened and he came out and got booed this week for the first time, maybe that might have messed with him a little bit more. So I get what you're saying there. I agree for all the same reasons here. I firmly believe that Daniel Cormier doesn't quite get the proper due for what he's accomplished in this sport, because he came out, started at a late age, absolutely mowed through the heavyweight division. He's undefeated at heavyweight. He beat several former champions. Went from there, went down a light heavyweight. People looked at his physique and thought he would never be able to make light heavyweight. And he's beaten everyone else there except John Jones. And that is not anything to be ashamed of, So I actually think that DC has one of the great legacies really in the history of MMA, but doesn't get credit for it. But that said, yeah, if he goes out and he loses to John Jones a second time, that's going to be like the first thing people talk about in his career, no matter what else he accomplished. Yep. Hey, he was there and he lost twice to Jones, but and like you said, if he loses to Jones, his path forward becomes murky. So I didn't actually have DC on my list, but I agree with you 100% here. And I think I kind of want to throw a little bit of a swerve at you here for my final thing, because I keep looking at the Fight Pass portion of UFC 200, and I almost want to throw the Diego Sanchez, Joe Lozon, and Jim Miller Takanori Gomi fights all together in one package, because we've got guys here who they're veterans, they have quite just a sterling history for outstanding, really exciting fights, win or lose. Off the top of my head, Sanchez has been involved in fights of the year. Lozon has been involved in fights of the year. Gomi against Nick Diaz, a fight of the year. I'm sure Miller versus Lozon, was one as well. So, yeah, I know I'm kind of skirting around making one pick, but I'm just really, really, really looking forward to these fights, because you've got, veterans who aren't going to challenge for a title anytime soon, but there's a little part of me that has a sneaking suspicion we might see one or two of these guys on UFC 300 as well. So I just want to give a little nod to the very, very exciting veterans in the lightweight division to close things off.
Well, that's an excellent way to finish off our top 10, so to speak, of this big UFC fight week. Before I let you go, Dave, give you a chance to plug your social media, Twitter, things coming up this week, where people can follow you, where
they can
meet you.
Sure, sure, sure. It's Dave Doyle MMA, DaveDoyle MMA at Twitter.com. And I don't know when this is going live, but for Boston area people, I will be on 98.5 The Sports Hub Tuesday morning at 9:20 a.m.
Excellent. So you said Tuesday morning. That's today.
I'm sorry. Today, let me try that again. I will be. We had yesterday off as a holiday. I will be on 98.5 The Sports Hub at 9:20 a.m. Wednesday.
Awesome. Well, great. Well, I'm glad I was able to make sure that that's right. I'm going to try to get this up tonight so people will be able to tune in before that. You're a media superstar, Dave. I appreciate that. And Dave Doyle, thanks so much for joining Josh Nason's Punch Out this week. This has been a lot of fun.
Been a pleasure. Thanks, man.
All right, everyone. Hope you enjoyed that conversation. That was a lot of fun. Again, originally supposed to be half an hour, but I was able to get some more out of him. You know your guy does it, right? But yeah, we'll definitely have Dave back at some point to talk more about his career and probably in maybe some quieter times. We can talk a little bit about kind of how he got to MMA fighting and may hopefully preview another event and all that stuff. But that was a really fun show. Again, big thanks to Dave, and you know how you can support him on Twitter and also read his stuff and tell him that you heard him on the show. Certainly appreciate it. I don't know what else I can really add to this. Not too much news has happened since I recorded that. Again, we recorded it on Tuesday night around 6 o'clock EST. So if something happens between the time I'm recording this intro, which is around 11:38 on Tuesday night, and when it gets released on Monday morning, you'll know why I missed it. Pretty much the only thing that really has happened since then is hashtag final deletion, the epic quote-unquote final battle, we'll see, between Matt and Jeff Hardy. If you're into professional wrestling, if you're not, you probably just hit stop on this podcast right now. But if you are and you did watch it, hopefully you enjoyed it. I have not watched a lot of TNA over the years just because I'm just really not that into it, and I barely watch Raw as it is, just kind of really keep a working knowledge of all those products. But there was just so much talk about this that I had to check it out. It was bizarre. It was wacky. There was fireworks. There was bad acting. There was drones. There was holograms. It was something else. I tell you what, if you're going to go out swinging, and who knows what's going on with TNA, I think everyone kind of assumes what's going to happen, but if you're going to go out, you might as well go out swinging. You might as well try some different stuff. And that's something we've talked about on this show before, trying different things with different fight promotions and so on, with Bellator. TNA is trying something different, and they got a lot of people talking about it afterwards. I'm sure a lot of people thought it was a train wreck. I'm sure a lot of people thought it was campy fun, but hopefully people seem to have fun with it, and we'll see what happens when the numbers come out. Did it mean any difference at all? I can't see how you would do more of these, because it would, I think once you do these things the first time, it's hard to kind of recreate that magic. But this is good for TNA. Hopefully it works out. And look, even if they're out of business here in a couple of months, at least we'll always have final deletion to look back on fondly, and maybe it'll be a nice chapter in someone's book about the death of TNA. Or they could keep going for a few more years and look back, and this is just a footnote. So hopefully everyone enjoyed that. Without further ado, I'm tired. I'm going to go to bed. Hopefully everyone enjoyed the show. Big thanks to Dave Doyle from MMAfighting.com. I'm going to try to perhaps get one more podcast in this week with someone actually competing on the card. One of the three cards coming up. So I got a few texts, phone calls in, so we'll see if we can do something short and quick coming up here before Saturday's big event. And with that, I'm going to say goodbye. Big thanks, Dave Doyle. Big thanks to all of you for listening and sharing and doing all that good stuff. I certainly appreciate it. And until next time, insert catchphrase here.